Welcome along to 30-something Gamers, the podcast about gaming for... Do we class ourselves as old, Boxy?
Not for our communities, but I suppose to most people... I don't know. Podcasting is a very late 20s, 30s, 40s sort of vibe, so maybe we're tapping into the right people here.
It's our sort of social media presences that we're probably old on, aren't we? Like, on TikTok, we are near death, probably, compared to the vast amount of people that use it.
Oh, God, the language some children use in my comments. I have to Google some of it because I've got absolutely no idea what they're on about. When was the first time you had L opinion written
An
on your
L
comments?
Or a W opinion. I've had that a few times. You know what it is? But being in the comments and having them there, I'm like, what does that mean? I do the old man thing of going on Google, find out what it means, and then I use some, well, some of them obviously because I can't with others. I use them in class with the kids and they're like, how do you know what that is? And then use the phrase that takes it all back and proves I'm old by going, I'm down with the kids. And then they go, well, no, you're not, because you just said that.
I don't think we'll ever be down with the kids. And the bro thing, when did bro become a thing? I always thought bro was an old thing that people in the 90s used to say in high school American teen comedies. But that is such a thing now. Everyone's bro.
But is it aggressive? Because I think back in the 90s, it was like, surfer dude, hey, bro. Whereas now it feels like, are you talking to me, bro? Like, that type of...
It's fucking patronising. It's like, bro. It's got that tone to it, even though you can't hear tone. When everyone comments it, I just hear, bro.
Do you know what I think it is? We were talking about moron. Because I called you a moron last episode because you were being one. And I think it's a modern moron. Because if you use it at the end of a sentence, so it's like, sort of, what are you talking about, bro? Aggressive. But if you use it at the start of a sentence, it's like, what is this guy on? Like, bro, what are you talking about? It's like, you're a moron. So is this the modern moron?
I'd forgotten that you called me a moron. But no, it comes screaming back to me now.
No. He says on this podcast that he forgot that I call him a moron. Okay, obviously we're chatting in WhatsApp to sort out these and to sort out other episodes and stuff coming up. He harks on about the Prattley every day. Every single day. You've actually, just before we started this podcast, we've sent a message to someone, which we'll mention at the end of the podcast. Ooh, stay tuned. And you mentioned that I'd called you a moron literally 10 seconds ago, so don't become this, oh, I'd forgot about it. Yeah, whatever.
Well, privately, I'm a very petty person, but publicly, I need to make it seem like I've got a bit of a no-care, free-spirit attitude about me. But yes, it fucking grated on me, that did, for a long, long time. It still does, and I'm never going to forget it. What were we talking about? Bro, yeah.
It is.
As soon as someone says that, it's like, on my opinion videos, bro said this, bro actually said that. Mm. Why can't they just say, I don't agree with you, like a fucking grown-up?
Do you know what it reminds me of? Because I can't take offence at, like, bro. It's like, oh, when I was working in Australia, I went travelling for a while, and I was working on a cotton farm in the middle of nowhere, and I was working with this really, really Irish person, like, proper Irish. And he used to say this phrase, but he used to use this word like it was the C word. Like, that's how much it offended him. But the word was... sausage. So he used to come out with, are you calling me a sausage? But that would make me laugh. But in his mind, that was like me calling him the C word. And he's like, are you laughing now at me calling you the C word? And it caused so much ruptions on the farm. Are you calling me a sausage? I'm like, yeah, I'm calling you a sausage. What about it?
He sounds a very delicate little flower. I mean, if that upsets him.
I'll tell you what
it is. God knows if something really harmful went his way.
When I say he was, like, completely Irish, he turned up on the farm. We'd already been working there. And he had not a penny to his name, like, no belongings, anything like that. He went and hunted a hog to feed himself till payday 2 weeks later. And it was just hanging up in the fridge, like this massive hog leg. And then when he got paid, he spent most of it on booze and got like a couple of, as he called them, guess what this is? A pan slice.
Pizza?
No. Think of the slice.
Pie?
No.
Is it food?
Yeah. So think about, he'd say, can you get me some pan slice and spaghetti hoops?
It's got to be pizza. What else would it be?
Loaf of bread.
Right.
I don't know if we've had any people listening from Ireland, but if you're from Ireland, in the comments, is pan slice a sliced loaf? Because obviously the slice comes with the slice. Pan, I'm sure in Spanish, pan means bread. Or some that's like GCSE coming back to me. So don't call an Irish man a sausage.
Valuable piece of information for the start of this podcast, Tom, as always.
Yeah,
so as thank always. You for that.
How about we get on to sort of gaming? You know, it's in the title. We always go off on one at the start here. What have you been doing in the world of gaming the last couple of weeks?
Well, weirdly, Tom, and in a very rare moment, something that you said on the last podcast stuck with me. You were talking about a game, and since we finished, I was like, I need to play that again because I haven't played that in a long, long time. It was a game that was sort of a passing comment. So, okay. But it just sort of said, oh, yeah, I haven't played that in a long time. Anyway, it's Hades.
Okay.
Yeah, so I was not a huge believer in roguelikes for a very long time because I didn't really understand the concept of why it was so appealing to so many people, just playing the same thing over and over and over again. But then when Hades came out, they said it's actually doing something very intelligent with that structure, and it makes a bit more sense than some other games. So I bit the bullet, and I bought it when it came out. I think it was in 2020 when it
came out. I've heard about that, I think, yeah.
Yeah, and I got it for the Switch, and I loved it. I thought from the storytelling side of things, it was very, very clever, and the roguelike design of it all made a hell of a lot of sense. And the gameplay is just very addictive. And it's a sexy game as well. The voice acting's really hot and everyone's got these skimpy clothes on and it's very beautifully put together. There's something very attractive about Hades. So I wanted to go back and play that. So I did. And I put a bit of time into it. I didn't complete a run or anything. I think I got to the Minotaur battle, which is, I think it's the third boss with him and...
There's two of them, isn't there? You've got to take them out... together. Yeah.
So that brought a lot of joy back because I do like Hades a lot. But I kind of dipped in and out of that a little bit. And the other game I played was one that's been on my shelf for years, but I've never actually got around to playing it. Dishonored 2. I loved Dishonored 1 when that came out. And I bought Dishonored 2 when it released, but just for some reason, it never found its way into the console. So I thought, I'm just going to bite the bullet and do it. And I'm only a few hours in, but I'm really, really enjoying it. And it's got me thinking a bit about Arkane Studios because they're a really interesting developer. Mm-hmm. I think they've got such a vibe with all their games. You can kind of tell if it's an Arkane game. Mm-hmm. But for every Dishonored, which I really like, they've got one which I hate. And I hated Deathloop. Oh. I don't know what you thought.
I tried to platinum Deathloop, as you can guess, and there's very few games where if I start and I'm going for the platinum that I'll just say, right, I'll give up and not do it. I gave up with Deathloop. I got to the end story bit and stuff like that, and I don't think the repetitive gameplay loop, going back to Hades, I did platinum Hades, I loved it. And like you say, the narrative feeds into why you can do it over and over and over again, which I loved as well. But Deathloop, the gameplay loop and going through, it seemed like it could be a really good idea. And it just didn't work for me. It was, by the time at the end, it wasn't like, oh, I want to go through and try and do this and try and do that to get the trophies of that. It was like, I'm done. It's quite boring now. Like, yeah. There wasn't much of, oh, you can go through and different happen things at different times. Because most of the time, if there's nothing happening in that area, you weren't allowed to go to it. So they didn't like set up lots of parallel sort of days that you could have. There was sort of a trope through it and there was maybe one or two spikes off. I think if they'd really lent into it of like literally every playthrough could be completely different because all I did was just skip a day to get to the day that I wanted to.
It was one of those things where I remember when it released and so many people were showering golden piss on it because they absolutely loved it. I think IGN gave it a 10 out of 10. And I know IGN can be quite lenient with their scores, but so many other publications did as well. So I thought, well, I've got to check this out. And I just could not understand what the hype was around it. And it's been interesting because I've spoken about it a few times on the channel and it is a really polarizing one. Some people say it's amazing or some people say it's shit. So, and a lot, the people who said it's really good, they say you really have to invest yourself in all the documents, in all the little Easter egg stuff, really immerse yourself in the world to kind of get a full flavor of what's going on. But it just did not click with me at all.
Well, I think when you last week were talking about The Wolf Among Us and you said that the great telling of a game of whether it's good or not is whether you can remember it. When I think about Deathloop, to be fair, until you mentioned there, I completely forgot that I'd really sort of went through it. But not only is a lot of the things that happen forgettable, if you ask, tell me what like some of the villains were or stuff like that, that you'd have to take down in order to achieve what you need to do, I couldn't remember any of them. Like, completely different to Dead Rising we talked about last week, where you can remember those bosses, the memorable. They should have done that. It would have been really cool. For me, was telling is at the end, it was supposed to be a hard choice because, spoilers, skip ahead if you don't want to know, you find out the person that's been hunting's your daughter. You have a choice to kill her or not at the end. I just blew her head off straight away. Like, there was no emotions in his going, oh, do we kill her or not? It was just like, right, yeah, let's finish the game. And I think that really tells you whether a game's hit the beat it's supposed to. When you try to put in those choices, if they don't mean anything to you, then they haven't done what they're trying to do, really.
No, I'm learning a lot about you, actually, Tom. And a few scenarios that we've put forward about what you would do in a scenario, your solution has been to blow them in the head.
Well, we talked about Lee last week as well. And
cruel bastard. It was a strange moment. And just going back to Dishonored 2, I think it's so far got a lot of really good ideas. It's a really well-designed sort of game. And just, I find Arkane really interesting because they did that Prey game as well, which everyone forgets. And it's a little bit like Bioshock. It's got a really clever story, but it's all wrapped around quite a meh gameplay design.
Oh, I like the gameplay design where you could, like, freeze. There was, like, a form that you could freeze, couldn't you, to make, like, stairs and stuff. I can't remember the gameplay completely, but I remember enjoying going through that. Didn't they called it Prey because their IP was running out of the Prey game that came out like for the 360 when it first came out, but it had nothing to do with it.
Yeah, it's a shit it's one of the worst titles ever. Right, first of all, it doesn't really mean anything, so it's a terrible title in the first place, but why would you call it the exact same thing as a game from a decade ago? It doesn't make sense.
A forgettable game? It's not as even if Prey was lauded upon and it's like, let's use this name to sell copies. Like, that wasn't a great received game, I don't think. It didn't do loads of sales, so it's not going to help the sales. If anything, people might say, oh, I played that, it wasn't very good, I'm not going to play this one. It was stupid.
But I think that any title structure that steals the title from somewhere else is ridiculous. God of War 2018. You could have called it something else.
Yeah.
Tomb Raider in 2013. Well, there's already a Tomb Raider game. It was on the PS1. Mm-hmm. Like, why confuse things? Why do I have to stick a date on the end of these titles to, you know, tell you
It's like starting a podcast about called 30-something Gamers when there's already one out there, isn't it? Ridiculous.
And as one of our friends pointed out, I thought this was going to be a podcast where you bring on 30 gamers.
There can't be anyone else out there who's looked at the title and thought, oh, there's going to be 30 people talking for an hour about games. That would be just absolute chaos. I talk over you all the time anyway. Imagine 30 people trying to put their two pence in.
It would stress you out, Tom. You'd be like, I can't get a gap in here anywhere.
I'm just trying to think how I would have edited it. That would absolutely blow my mind. Anyway, getting back in the world of games this week, I've been playing pretty much what I've been talking about recently, but I did want to ask a question. You mentioned
already.
You mentioned roguelikes, and at first you thought, why would people want to do this loop? Why would people want to? I think, like, quite a similar thing with Dark Souls that we might get into one day. Why do you want pain and do you not want fun? Why do people want to scare the shit out of themselves? Last night? Night before, I did a stream. I do it once a week because my community are just hateful people whose most enjoyed night of the month is the one month that I'll play a horror game because I'm really soft as out when it comes to the horror games. I cack myself at them. And they are allowed, when they hit a certain amount of likes and stuff, it plays like a jump scare thing. And I've been playing the more Mortuary Assistant. don't know if you've seen it.
Oh, yeah.
And it is, like, I enjoy a horror game like a Dead Space and stuff like that. I can get behind them, the atmosphere and stuff like that. But just a jump scary game. Do any people play these for fun on their own? Who sits at home and goes, right, I'm going to play this. It'll scare the shit out of us. I'll jump every 2 seconds. I'll be shaking. I honestly, at the end of stream, I think it was about 3-4 hour stream, I felt like I was having a heart attack. Like, really did. When it goes into the story beats in the game, where you're like sort of walking through and you find out about her past and she caused a death and there's the statues and there's a river of blood, it doesn't scare me. But then at one point I was pulling the trolley with obviously some auxiliary assistance, so you're doing autopsy. I was about to say a vasectomy. You're doing autopsies on them. So I'm pulling this body back to put it in the freezer, and there's just this little head like goes like, hello! Like, well, it doesn't say the voice, but this like all black silhouette just pops up at the end, and I jump a mile. Like, I do it because the community enjoy. I also do it because people come in, and if you follow me, you can do a jump scare, so we know what we're doing there. I got like 110 followers. But probably 60 of them left. They're probably just followed and scared us and then unfollowed straight away. So it is good for engagement and stuff like that. I'm trying to think of more things that can... I definitely want to be like an interactive streamer, like they can do stuff. It's harder when you're small and you haven't got as many people in the comments and things like that, and you can't sort of do polls where there's going to be huge swings and stuff like that. But this is one where it can be. But if it wasn't for that, I would go nowhere near this game. I don't know who it's there to please.
I do like a horror game. I semi agree with you. I think if it's just jump scares, then that is a bit of a cheat. I think a good horror game has to have a degree of subtlety to it, and you know, as you said, Dead Space, a good storytelling, Silent Hill 2, there's all that kind of hidden analysis you could tap into. But if it's just going boo at you every 5 minutes. Five Nights at Freddy's, look how amazingly popular that series has been. And that was just built off people shitting themselves on stream.
But do you not think, let's take away streaming, let's bring that game out 10 years before it came out, do you think it would have been as big? Because for me, I think like Five Nights at Freddy's, FNAF, like the kids say, was brought out for streaming interaction, and that's why people play it. And I just can't comprehend anyone playing those games on their own for fun, apart from maybe younger people and stuff like that, seeing their favorite streamers play it and stuff like that, and then think, oh, I'll give that a go, it'll be funny and stuff like that. Like, I might play one of those games when I have friends rounds and stuff and think, oh, I'll play this, it's quite funny. And it is a good game. It is quite fun in that respect. And it isn't just jump scare. Every now and again, jump scare. They do have a couple of fake outs where your lights will go off. And I think that's always the best way to get someone. Because if you just got jump scare, when the light goes off, I'm like, all right, something's going to happen. But sometimes it doesn't. So I sort of enjoyed it because I was with the community. But honestly, my heart rate, I felt like I was going to have a heart attack. And I just still don't know. Please let us know in the comments if you enjoy those type of games, if you're masochistic at any point. And
I would say, but you can't, unless you've got it downloaded, I would suggest PT, which I think is it's the scariest game ever made. And it does have the jump scares, but there is this doom and this uncertainty and not knowing what's... I think the not knowing what's around the corner vibe of that game, because have you seen it? It's a corridor.
It's this thing where I know it's a corridor, and it repeats itself, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But I've stayed away. I've never played it. Like you say, you have to have a PS3 or a PS4 with it downloaded, because you can't get it anymore. Obviously, Konami take it down. But I've tried to stay away in case there's any point in the future I will be able to play it. I don't want anything spoiled, you know what I mean? I feel like it's one of those where if I know what's going to happen, it's just pointless playing it, really. Like now, on the mortuary assistant, if I go back in and you've got half an idea of what's going to happen, it doesn't hit you as much. So I've tried to stay away a little bit, but I know the sort of roughly what it's about.
It's fantastic. And I'm lucky enough that I have got it on my PS4 and it's never getting deleted. It doesn't make my PS4 any more valuable, to be honest.
I think it does.
Because
I thought,
Well, I thought this, but it's tied to your account, isn't it? So if you sold it on, then they would need to log in as you.
Just sell your account?
Oh, no. I don't want that.
How many platinums you got?
Oh, not many. Like
well, there
three.
You go. Doesn't matter.
I mean, I'm not like you, Tom. I haven't got a trophy cabinet of pointless bling that I can't do anything with.
The Scotch Mist trophy cabinet is... Actually, I do have some actual trophies up there.
Participation
again,
trophies.
No, this is another sort of glimpse into my psyche. I'm the coach of the girls' football team at my school. Creator, okay. Coach. And every time we go to a tournament, they'll normally have a set amount of, like, trophies for what the team. Some teams have 10 players, some have 11, some have 9, blah, blah, blah. So that they make sure there's enough trophy for everyone. And whenever we go to one and there's a spare trophy, or there's 10 and we've only got 9 on the team, I keep it for myself. and I've got like a little thing there and says, well, I coached, so no one else is going to have it, so I may as well have it. So yeah, I've got trophies up there.
And it says women's football on it.
It's like under 10s cup champion. Under 10 girls cup champion. Yeah.
Well, congratulations, Tom. You should be very proud of yourself.
On to remake, recycle.
No. I got trivia first.
Oh, I keep forgetting about you. I try to block it out because you keep calling me spectacularly wrong with it. So come on then. See, I block and forget these things. You harken, hold on to them. And I just let it go, man. Bro.
Well, because you performed so badly with this section on the past two episodes, you really need to fight and get yourself back up to some better level. Because you are a gamer and you clearly do know your stuff, but your trivia knowledge is shocking. I mean, if you were on Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, at this rate, you wouldn't make it past the 200 mark.
No, don't be daft. Don't be daft. I definitely bang on 32 guaranteed and maybe higher. Maybe higher.
Would I be your phone a friend?
No.
Oh, go on. It'd be
no,
a laugh.
No, no. What are you going to offer? What would be your specialist subject?
Gaming.
I've got that myself, much more than you. I don't need another one.
Well, clearly not, because you got none of the trivia questions right so far.
That you Googled the answer for. You can't say, oh, well, I asked these questions. You didn't know them until you Googled. There's no way you had those marketing things in your head.
Well, you don't know that. Maybe we should swap trivia around in a few episodes' time, and you can ask me some of these things. We'll pit ourselves against each other. No, I was going to say something. What else can I bring? Simpsons, seasons 1 to 8. I can probably memorize those off by heart.
There's like 30-odd seasons now. What happens if it's after season 8?
Oh, I don't know. Well, I could probably stretch to 10, but I really dropped off after that. The writing got very bad after that, I thought. The films of Stanley Kubrick, I'm very well versed in those. AC/DC.
This is all right if we're on Mastermind and the questions are all funneled down one topic, but on like a random general knowledge question. Do you know what it is? I probably wouldn't put you down. And then the question I use on my lifelines would be on, in the Stanley Kubrick film, I'd be like, oh, bastard. And then the one I'd lose on it would go, in season 7 of The Simpsons, and I'd be like, and you just gloat.
But even if you did have me down as your phone a friend and it was one of those questions and you did phone me, I'd be like, we've got 30 seconds here. What's in it for me? You know, you're getting £32,000, £64,000 out of this. What the hell is in it for me?
What's the ratio? How much am I getting of this? I'll tell you for $4,000.
Exactly. And then I'll just give you the wrong answer.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I've got high hopes for you today, Tom. My optimism is sky high. So for this week's trivia, I asked Tom questions about gaming, and he proves to the audience whether he is a true gamer or whether he's a poser, whether he's one of these guys who bought a Wii in 2007 and played on Wii Sports with the family for about 6 months, and then it got pushed into a cupboard and collected dust for 15 odd years. So we're going to see. And this week, it's all about dialogue, particularly bad gaming dialogue. And we spoke on the last episode about how atrocious Castlevania Symphony of the Night's opening dialogue was, even though the game's fantastic.
Yeah.
So I have got some quotes here from games, and you need to figure out which game they're from. we're going to start off very easy. And if you don't get this, we need to pack in this podcast right now because we are not up to scratch if you don't get this.
Resident Evil, so Jill Sandwich.
You know what? Fuck you, Tom. Right.
It's when you said very easy. Now, I thought he was going to lead us in with that one. Sorry, I had to piss on your chips there. I had to do it.
Well, you haven't got the right quote. The one that I wrote down was, here's a lockpick. It might be useful if you, the master of unlocking, took it with you.
Yeah, I would have got that one. I would have got that one as well.
Right, I'll give you that one then.
Yes.
This one, number two, this is quite funny, this one. And there's a few layers to this one. And you do like the game, so I hope you do get it. Mm-hmm. I should have been the one to fill your dark soul with light. There's a chat-up line for you.
Oh, I know it. Because it's very much, I should have been the... Devil May Cry.
Yes. Ding, ding, ding. Well done.
You know what it is? If I'd not played it for a while, I think I'd have struggled. But I did that on stream quite recently. Well, I say recently, like three, four months ago or so. Yeah, and the chat was enjoying. It's the delivery as well. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's so over the top, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, let's keep this momentum going. Mm-hmm. Did I just move shit with my mind? Ha ha! That is just something that I do now.
Did I just move? Telepathy.
Now, this game was famous for how atrocious its dialogue was, and it got meme popularity off the back of it.
Oh, I guess I just do that now. So someone who got the power. I'm gonna phone a friend. I need a clue.
I think it's a Square Enix game.
Is it an RPG?
No.
I can't get Kingdom Hearts out of my mind, but there's nowhere the word shit has ever been said in the Kingdom Hearts.
Yeah, Donald Duck says it.
Oh, no. I did good in the first two, but I'm stumbling here. I'm stumbling.
I mean, it's not a very popular game. It's actually made a lot of worse lists for the year. It's right, okay. Forspoken.
I bought it because it was that cheap, but I've not played it yet. I've got that much of a backlog. I just saw it was like £5, and I was like, a PS5 game, £5, I'll get that, and I'll put it in. I might try it sometime. Because I was really looking forward to Forspoken. The stuff I thought, that might be quite cool. You're in this sort of aesthetic, but you've got someone from sort of our world, and then I heard all the reviews and stuff, so that's why it stayed downstairs unplayed.
So your final one.
Yeah,
and I think I saw this on your list, so I hope you do get it. And this is one of my very guilty pleasures in gaming. You ever slice the ear off a baby cow? They scream and they scream. It's funny.
Oh, have you ever sliced the ear off a baby cow? I feel like if I'd played that, I would really know it.
Like it's a very infamous game.
Is it infamous?
No, it's not infamous.
I thought it was like the worst clue ever. A very infamous...
Or the best clue ever, if it was infamous.
Yeah. Game where... A cow's prominent in the game?
No.
Oh, I'm going to need a clue.
It is voted possibly the worst game of all time.
The worst game of all time? It can't be Superman 64. Ride to Hell Retribution?
Ride to Hell Retribution.
Shall I tell you what it is? I am streaming that game tonight.
Well, you look forward to that line because it happens in the first 10 minutes. I have such a love for that game, for how bad it is, and I hope you enjoy it as much as I do. Go into it expecting the absolute worst and you'll find joy in that game, trust me.
Do you know what it is? Obviously, at the minute, I'm going for a full PS2 and a full 360 collection, and I honestly get more excited playing the really bad games than I do the good games. Because obviously, a lot of the good games, to be fair, I've played. I played them as they were coming out and were there. But those like the Ride Hell Retribution. It was actually chose by one of my supporters, and I thought, oh, I can't wait to play that. So we'll be putting a couple of hours into that night, and I'll wait for the cow dialogue.
Yeah, and we talked earlier about being memorable and things sticking with you. Ride to Hell Retribution will stay with you for the rest of your life with how awful it is. But it's one of those things where it just brings me so much joy when, you know, at the end of a film or a game and you sit back and you just look at how many people were involved in a game. the
yeah,
credits.
There's
just hundreds of people, and it makes me so happy that all those people got on board and made one of the worst things in the world, and they all thought it was a good idea. And oh, that's glorious. That's a beautiful thing.
Do you think ever they're making a game and they look at it and they go, this is a bit shit, isn't it? Why don't we lean into it? Why don't we continue to make it bad? But then sometimes I think when that happens, it feels, when you try to make something bad, you can't. But when you try to make something good, some absolutely glorious crap comes out of it. So yeah, I'll be looking forward to that one tonight.
I will try and join if I'm available, because I want to see some of your reactions to some of the horrendous stuff that happens in Rytale Retribution.
Great. Right, so let's move on to Remake, Recycle, Remaster. If you're just joining for this first time, what we do here is we choose three games. One of them we're going to remake, one of them we're going to recycle, and one of them we are going to remaster. So, Boxy, you normally go first for this, and I'm going to have to ask you to go first, because this is the first time coming into this. I am still a little bit undecided in my head. Mm. And your thoughts could influence me.
Okay. Well, they haven't influenced you on any of the other ones so far, so I'll be very surprised if they do. But this one, we are choosing three of possibly the greatest games of all time. So it has been a really difficult one. We are choosing Super Mario 64, Super Mario Sunshine, and Super Mario Galaxy. And I know that they've already been remastered on the Switch port, but we are looking at this purely from a separate perspective. You got very in touch with your inner childhood on the last episode, so I'm going to depress you with my one. Well, no, because it's actually quite a nice story, to be honest. So for a long time, and I mean, you know, we're talking 20 years or so, I would have said that Super Mario 64 was my all-time favorite game ever. I spent so many good memories with that game, and the magic behind it, the sense of discovery, the secrets, the fact that we'd never seen anything like that before. To go from Super Nintendo to N64 and the leap from those. You look at PS4 to PS5 and, you know, my mother would not be able to tell the difference, but the jump in quality from those two consoles was absolutely out of this world. And that discovery and that magic of walking around that castle, jumping into paintings, finding the stars, deciphering the clues, and spoilers, you know, finding Yoshi on the roof, wondering whether Luigi was in this game. Those are some of my most precious gaming memories of all time. But then I made the mistake of playing Super Mario 64 again, and I realized that a lot of the love that I had for that game was from that first ever playthrough, where I spent a very long time in my youth trying to get to 120 stars. And it did take a long time. It took years because I was young and I wasn't massively skilled, and to get all the coins and to find all the secrets took many years. So Super Mario 64 has unfortunately been knocked off the top spot, and it's actually dropped quite a few places, unfortunately, but I still love the game. And I think in terms of an innovative title that really did change the landscape, that shook things up and put us where we are today, it's a masterpiece. So those are my thoughts on Super Mario 64. Super Mario Sunshine has great ideas, and it was very creative. It didn't have the polish of some of the other ones, and some of it doesn't work, I would say, but very charming, full of personality. But the Delfino Plaza as a hub world, you know, exploring those creative elements like with the flood mechanic, they really tapped into their creative minds on that one and tried to flesh out a lot of different things. And not all of it works, but the majority of it does. Super Mario Galaxy, the logical direction, take Mario to space because he's pretty much done everything else. I would say it's probably my least favorite, but I still enjoy it. I like the creativity. I like the gravity mechanics of it all. I think the hub world is very chill and very calming. Why they got rid of that in Super Mario Galaxy 2 makes no sense to me. But in terms of the level design, I really miss the exploration nature of what 3D Mario titles had with 64 and Sunshine. It's a lot more linear in Galaxy. And for me, 3D Mario is best when you're exploring and you're finding out secrets and looking under every stone and blade of grass just to see if there's something there. And they brought a lot of that magic back in Odyssey, I thought. So on that basis, I've made my decision that I want to recycle Galaxy because I still think it doesn't need remastering. I think it still looks great on the Wii, and I don't think a remake would elevate it as much. But I think with something like Sunshine, if you did remake that, you could do something very, very creative and very cool. And I am going on your basis of remake the shittier one, and it's not a shit game, but it's definitely probably the weaker one. And for nostalgic purposes, and because I have a lot of core memories with Mario 64, I'm going to remaster that one.
They are good takes, but you haven't influenced me at all because I can't recycle Galaxy. Now, for me, when you're saying you're going back to your nostalgia and your old sort of games and stuff that you had, at first I thought this was going to be easy because I got a N64 after my Mega Drive, and obviously when you first got it, if you got it when it released, you had to get Mario 64. It was just so far ahead of its time. So I have a load of nostalgia with that, the same as you put so many hours in. I had Mario Galaxy and put quite a few hours into that, but I never had a GameCube, not back in the day, so I hadn't played Mario Sunshine as much. However, I do have a cousin that I'm very close to. He's like a brother to us, and he had it. And when I started thinking about it, I had like, well, it was a half term or a weekend. I went over to like stay for the weekend or something, and he had it, and we put so many hours in together. And I'm like you, Boxy, growing up, I was a very much sort of solo gamer, single player games and stuff like that. And those little instances of times where I played games together and stuff like that, like sort of stuck with me. And sort of, I can remember them. I've got it with this, like Streets of Rage, Quackshot on the Mega Drive. I can remember those times loads. So it made it much harder. But that, not that hard because I'm going to recycle it.
Oh. Man,
nostalgia didn't win on this one. For me, I agree with you. Some of the mechanics and stuff like that didn't really work with it. And with the flood backpack and stuff like that, it didn't feel to me entirely Mario, if you know what I mean. It felt like the same way when Star Fox, what was the one on the GameCube called? Adventures?
Oh, yeah, that was terrible. Yeah.
It wasn't a Star Fox game because wasn't Rare making some sort of dinosaur game or whatever. Then they reskinned it and it was a Star Fox game. So it didn't feel like it. I mean, you hardly, I don't know if you ever even do fly in that game. I feel like it feels a little bit like that. So for me, looking at it, I was thinking, right, 64 and Galaxy. For me, I love 64 that much because the same as you, nostalgia, remaster that one. Now, I have not played the remasters, remakes and stuff like that that came out on the 3D pack that they brought to the Switch or whatever. So I just thought bringing it, remastering it, giving it a polish it for so I can play it for the nostalgia and working with a controller that you don't have to have three hands to work would be good, which obviously it already has anyway. But Galaxy, for me, I really enjoyed it, and it was a time where I came away from it. I think I enjoyed it because I was at that time where I was playing like Call of Duty and this, that, and the other, and I went back and it was something completely different that I played compared to everything else I was playing on 360 at the time. So I do have fond memories with that, and I just thought, obviously, they've got the mechanics with using the Wii controller to collect the things and stuff like that. So remaking it so it works with like modern Switch controllers and stuff like that, and getting it sort of working, trying a few new things with it. And for me, when we grew up, you were on the dark side of SNES, and I was on the light side, the Jedi's Mega Drive side, with blast processing behind me. And Sonic has always been very linear, and I think that's sort of stuck with me. And although I do like big open world games like Final Fantasy and stuff like that, a lot of the times I just want, yeah, show us where to go, do this next and stuff like that. So Galaxy spoke to us a little bit more on that level. So that's the one that I would remake. I didn't know with the remake and the whether it will be that one or Sunshine, but I I just think, for me, Galaxy's more different to the Mario games you get, so it's something else out there. And also, Sunshine didn't feel Mario-y enough. So I'm describing him as a Mario. So I can easily put that one in the bin. But let us know in the comments, which of you do you agree with? Do you not agree with any of us? Let me know it in the comments. If you're wondering why I didn't mention comments before, we haven't got any. And that's not because we're a terrible podcast. Might be some of the reason. But it is because we are literally recording this on the day episode 3's come out, so no one's had time to comment. But we will reference any comments that come in. So let me know, what do you think about this? And please agree with me and not Boxley, because we do use it as a point of pride.
I think you've tapped into a bigger thing, though, with your rambling, what you just...
Why is it always going to be a ramble? Why, when you it is talk, a ramble. Is it like intelligent prose that you've put together and thought about and rattled your brain about? And then when I talk, I'm just a rambling baboon?
Exactly. And that's how it should be.
So you're not backing your argument up. You're just saying, yes, that's true.
Exactly. No, I think you've tapped into... First of all, when I say these words, I come at it from love. You know, we have very different styles.
Doesn't and feel you like it.
You can talk and talk and talk, and you know that's lovely, but I like to reserve myself in some places, so I take a little bit more time. But that's not a bad thing, and it's not a bad thing that you like to tell me really random shit that has no importance at all in the grand scheme of things, but it clogs up my inbox and is stopping me from getting on with my life. So thank you so much for those rambly WhatsApp messages that you leave me, where you're telling me that Gary Newman is older than Gary Oldman.
That is a fact people need to know.
Yeah, because Gary Oldman, the irony.
I tell you what it is, right, in the comments, is it essential information that you know that, and also... is it essential to know that you can buy a left-handed pasty?
Well, clearly it is to you.
It's cold up here and we've got nothing to do in the north. We're talking about pasties and puns on names.
But going back, you said that I'm on the dark side with my Super Nintendo past and you are on Sega Mega Drive side. Mm-hmm. And I think that's a podcast in itself, because I can debate the fuck out of that.
Well...
and you said blast processing, which doesn't mean anything. That was a marketing technique which just spoke to stupid people.
Yeah, right, okay. So what you're saying is blast processing was just something loud that was said and rambled on about and meant nothing.
Yes.
I can see why Sega, I enjoyed it.
Sega Mega Drive was a 18-year-old douche dressed in the most expensive clothes, shouting, look at me, and the Super Nintendo was the hard-working boy who didn't dress great, but he had great personality, he was a good character, you wanted to be around him, he delivered. And
For nerds.
But yeah, you know what?
I was cool.
The nerds rise.
Sonic eats chili dogs.
Yeah.
So he's and cool?
Do you remember that show Sonic Underground?
No, I remember some of the cartoons, but I don't think I watched that one.
He was in a band.
Do you know, originally when they were doing the Mega Drive and stuff like that, and they were trying to do all the promotion and stuff, he was going to be dating Madonna.
Oh, I would have loved that. Have you seen Sonic Curry?
Sonic Curry?
Yeah. No. So in the 90s, when they were whoring their brands out to everything, they did some food items, and there is a Sonic the Hedgehog curry, and guess what colour it is?
Not blue.
It's blue. Google it.
A blue curry. Here you go. Here is some clever, pithy comment. Does it give you the runs?
I think that was the marketing strapline.
And on a blue curry, we will move on to the part where, but to be fair, most of the podcast, Boxy tries to alienate most people with his ridiculous hot takes, but we have a specific section, and he's going to tell us now why you should hate him.
So we should just rename this part of the podcast Shit on Boxy.
Yeah, definitely.
I honestly think some people are going to get behind me on GoldenEye. Ooh. Some people already have. Mm-hmm.
I tell you what it is, I'll put one out there in the ether. In between these podcasts, myself and Boxy have both been on Coach Marv's podcast, Champion the Gamer. If you haven't listened to it, drop it a follow, listen. It's great. It's what a podcast should be. It's nothing like ours. Coach Marv is great. If you've never heard of him before, he's a TikToker whose sole purpose it is to ask really intriguing and thought-provoking questions on TikTok, as well as champion other people, smaller creators. If you're looking to get into sort of the retro gaming sphere on TikTok and you want to know who to sort of listen to, go and find Coach Marv's page, because he'll only suggest people he actually thinks are good. He doesn't just do it for the sake of it or anything like that. And we've both been on there because we both have the seal of approval. He saved the best to last, so hours after Boxy. But on there, he asks everyone for a hot take, and my hot take was that Final Fantasy IX is not very good. So in order to try and push some people over that podcast for him, I did a TikTok talking about how I didn't think it was very good and say, go and listen for my full sort of ideas and stuff on it. And I was ready for backlash. You can see at the start of the video, I'm ready for backlash. There are so many people agreeing with me in the comments. And so there might be people agreeing with you, but it's only because they've been in the shadows. It's curled in a corner with this terrible thought in the mind that they know is wrong, and they've not been able to speak about it. And now they suddenly hear you spouting shite and go, I'm going to jump on with that.
Exactly. I inspire confidence in people to come forward. Although the GoldenEye one is very hot, and I, you know, I fully respect if anyone doesn't want to come out and say that they didn't like it, because it is a bit of digital suicide in a way. People get very upset with you. And you pretty much put out a mafia hit on me.
Yeah.
You said in our promotion of this podcast, or whatever you want to call it, that I have a terrible take and I'm shitting on one of the greatest games of all time. Go and get him.
You know,
right. You sound like you're the leader of a fox hunting group. Go get him, dogs.
You don't link me with anything Tory related. Come on, let's not talk about religion or politics on this podcast. But yeah, if you're gonna just, when me and you were talking, you think you're all Billy Big Bollocks going, oh yeah, GoldenEye, it's crap. Yeah, you're wrong. I'll set the dogs on you.
I am way more articulate than that.
I'm articulate. I've got a degree in English literature.
I do, a very bad degree. Right. So I'm talking about Coach Marv, and I completely agree. Get listening to Coach Marv's podcast. It is fantastic. And I had a lot of fun on there talking about stuff with him. And this week's hot take is kind of tied into what I spoke about with him. So I spoke specifically about one game being too long, and it's Uncharted 4. Which I think is about 6 or 7 hours too long. But if you want my full argument on that, then go and listen to Coach Marv's podcast. But now I'm going to branch it out much wider than that. And I'm generally going to claim that I think shorter games are better than longer games. Mm. Now, I know you are somebody who can plow hundreds of hours into whatever, but when I'm looking at my favorite games, all of them are really tight experiences. And when I say short games, I'm not talking about, you know, your indies, which are 3 or 4 hours. I'm talking about an average of around 10 hours, I would say. I think that is a perfect time for a game. I think regardless of how good or bad your game is, can't outstay its welcome. I think in time you will get tired of it, and regardless of how many ideas are behind the core formula of it, it needs to keep you hooked and it needs to keep you engaged. And yes, there are games out there which are 30, 40, 50 hours long, and there are going to be fantastic moments in it, but I don't think for the full playtime, when you're talking at that length of time, it can keep you engaged for the whole length. And particularly for me, because I can't spend hours gaming. You know, it is a very short burst, an hour a night, hopefully. If I'm playing a new game, I want to make sure that I can get through it in a decent amount of time. And for me, that's about a week. and then I can move on to the next one. And I think it stays fresh in your mind. I don't think I'm going to get fed up of it. And even if I didn't particularly like it, at least it didn't take up too much of my time. I don't think there's anything worse than having to slog through 25, 30 hours of something that you just aren't into. There's always the argument that, well, it all comes down to cost. And I hate it when developers go out in their press and their marketing and say, we've got a 100-hour game here. You know, there's so much content. It will take you hours and hours. I remember when Dying Light 2 was bragging that the completionist would take 400 hours or something stupid like that. And we're supposed to take that as a positive. You know, why would I want to spend so much time doing something which I'm not going to get a lot of value back from? And okay, it's quantity, but where's the quality? And in terms of the cost, you know, 60 pounds for a game that is only 8 hours long gets a lot of shit in the press and from the community. People say, oh my god, that's ridiculous, you're ripping us off. But if it's good stuff and if it's quality, then I don't see the problem with that. I would rather pay 50 quid for a fantastic game that is tight than a 30-hour game which is a slog. And what clicked, what made me realize this, was I was playing Darksiders 2. Have you played that?
I've not played. I've got them, but I've not played the Darksiders series yet.
Okay. So I really like the first one. Really good. It's stealing pretty much every idea from every other game on the planet, but it's doing its own thing.
Is it the one where you play as the four horsemen of the apocalypse?
Yeah, the first one, you're the first one, and in the second one, you're Death.
Right, okay.
But in Darksiders 2, it's about a 24-hour game, a 24-hour length, but it is just marching you through these blueprints of find three things to open the door to take on a boss, and it's just repeating that over and over and over again. And you can say it plays fine, there's nothing wrong with it, the enemy design's great, the controls are good, the weapon variety is nice, but it's not doing anything interesting. And for me, if you can keep things tight, we always used to say at university, because I'm a very well-read man with my third degree in English literature, but if you can tell a story in 10 words, why tell it in 100? And one of the hardest things that we had to do at university was to write a story within 240 characters, which was the tweet length at the time. It had to have a beginning, middle, and end. And it was really difficult, but it kind of helped us realize that if you can scale things down and make things simple and tight and with no fat on it, it makes a much better impression. And when I look at some of the games who are best examples of that, I'd say Outlast is up there. 4 or 5 hour game, a shot of adrenaline spread over one night of madness. It's so high adrenaline, that game, but it's tight. And if it was any longer, I don't think it would make the same impact. Spec Ops The Line, a game where the character's losing his mind. Silent Hill 2, I think the original is perfectly paced. I actually thought the remake, even though I liked the remake, I thought they bloated up some of the sections unnecessarily. I think that game is about 4 hours too long, and I don't think it heightens the experience at all. I don't get this whole, we're just going to extend the time, the length, the playtime of this game, and it will make it seem like the game's better. I've never agreed with that. And even with bad games, I remember when the Order 1886 came out, and one of the big things that people complained about was that it was too short. Mm-hmm. It was only 6 hours or something. But that game was terrible. I think the one positive about that game was that it was short, because at least you didn't have to slog through hours and hours of just boring cover-based shooting. And all right, it was shit, but it was short. You know, get it off the table, go and play something else. And particularly with YouTubers like Angry Joe, he's got that meme where he goes, 4 hours, you know, it's terrible, it's 4 hours. Mm-hmm. Why is that such a bad thing, you know?
I need to address 2 points before I go into my opinions on this. When Boxy said, just because I don't want everyone to think that I'm like the dumbass that's been dragged along. When Boxy said his third degree in English literature, he didn't mean that he's got 3 degrees. He meant he's got a third in English literature, just so you know that.
which just FYI, is the worst grade you can get without it being a fail.
Yeah, I just say my degree's a 2-1. And I've got a postgraduate as well. And just to caveat that, me trying to sort of big myself up with my degrees there, I'm going to prove now that I'm still a 13-year-old child inside my head. I nearly laughed every time you said the word tight. And I had to get that thought out of my head. You know when you always send me a message and say, Tom, every thought in your head doesn't have to come out. Honestly, I think they do. Like, it's like Tourette's. Like, they have to. The burn.
You're a child, essentially. You're giggling at a word. Well, what would you call it? I think
it's exactly right. It's nothing on you. It's completely me. But as soon as the first time you said it, my mind went straight to Toyed Like a Tiger from Austin Powers, and I couldn't get it out of my head. So I apologise for that. If you saw me smirking or laughing through any of your well-thought-out points, it wasn't because they were thought out or anything. It was just that. I just need to ask a question. I can't remember. Have I agreed with any of your hot takes?
No.
No.
Well, you sort of agreed. You've sort of given me 80-90% on a few of them.
Yeah, yeah.
You said no with Kratos. You said no with The Walking Dead because you thought other ones were good. I can't remember what my first one was, but you probably disagreed with me.
Yeah, definitely. So we could have them. So because I agree with a lot of your points. As a lot of you know, I mentioned on previous podcasts that I am a primary school teacher. I'm up at the sort of later end of primary school where we're getting them ready for comp and stuff like that. And there's so much of my English lessons I talk about, it's not quantity, it's quality when we're talking about writing. I always mention that I've got this book of horror stories, and they're all one-page horror stories, and it's a great book. It's really good. And I always talk about that. And when you I was smiling as well, because when you mentioned about at university having to put something down in a tweet, I've used that multiple times in class to help kids learn how to summarise points and stuff like that. And it is such a hard thing to do, but I completely disagree with you.
Oh, I thought we were going to come to a nice conclusion there, that we've come together on it. Well, I knew you weren't going to agree with me on this because you are very Witcher 3, Fallout, Final Fantasy. So I knew it wasn't going to be for you.
Well, it's for me. There's a lot of things that you mentioned that stick with me. And being a platinum hunter exacerbates a lot of the things you said about fluff and extending a run time for the sake of doing it. Watchtowers, collectibles, all of that. I have done that for years and I absolutely hate it. I know that there's something urges in us to get the platinum, but this is breaking news. I think I'm moving away from platinum hunting.
Oh, thank God.
So a lot of it is because I'm looking at what I'm doing streaming-wise and stuff like that. Unless my channel is based on getting platinums and stuff like that, it's not what people want to see. People don't want to see me going through a game and just, oh, I'm going to collect this, I'm going to collect this, I'm going to collect this, I've got me. It's not fun to watch. And I've tried it on a couple of streams. Like I said, I mentioned I've been doing The Witcher, and I just think, would I watch this? Not really. Can I do the boring bits off stream and the main part? Well, I could, but I have 2 kids and a full-time job, so it's not going to happen. So I'm moving away from that, and I'm a little bit excited that I can just now. I've got Alan Wake 2 waiting for me, and after we recorded this, in the next couple of days, I'm taking a break from streaming and content creation. I've got a load of videos, so I can still put some out like daily on my TikTok and stuff like that, but I don't have to make them or anything like that. A necessary little social media break and stuff I need to reset, to spend some like a lot more quality time with the family and stuff like that. I urge anyone who's a creator and stuff like that to think about it and do it for themselves. And I'm looking forward to playing Alan Wake and just enjoying it, not thinking, have I missed this? Have I missed that? And I'm looking forward to it because I do absolutely hate extending a runtime for the sake of it. Do you know what it is? It's like someone coming down and say, yes, I have the longest penis in the world. And then they just lie there like a canoe.
Yeah, I've got the longest penis in the world, but it's very veiny and very rotten and very diseased. and no one wants to spend time with that.
I thought I was going too far with the analogy, and then you just stepped over that line and danced on the other side while you were looking at me and waving your veiny member in my face. So, the reason I don't agree is some of the games that you mentioned. Last week, Desert Island Games, I put Final Fantasy in there. That's, I think, about a 60-70 hour if you don't do everything, go for the ninth of the round and stuff like that. And that had me hooked for so much longer. I agree with you. It can't be on the edge of your seat, adrenaline, big story moments all the time for that amount of time. It can't be. You'd be exhausted and the wouldn't hit. But I think things like, spoilers, Aerith's death, Ares, sorry, I'm an original Ares, fucking Aerith. So Ares' death means more because you have spent so much time with her. And you feel like you know that character because of the little, all the story beats that aren't the big moments, aren't they? You're escaping from, you know, it's the bits where you're traveling and you talk and you find about the life and other things that have happened and stuff like that, and it absolutely killed me. And I thought, right, well, when the remake comes out, it's not going to kill me as much because I know what's happening, I know what's going to come. And then they put in this scene, and again, Rebirth, I put 214 hours in. I am not saying that's acceptable. I think I finished the game in about 90 hours, and I think it was maybe 5-10 hours too long. But all the other stuff can get in the bin. But what it did is it explored some of the backstories of some of the characters a little bit more. And there's a part where you get near the end. Now, this is spoilers. If you haven't played Rebirth and Final Fantasy VII fan, go ahead again. I've mentioned it a couple of times now. But there's a part where Barrett, it has a flashback near the end in the Temple of the Ancients. And he sees his wife. Now, you heard about it all the time in the old games, but you never saw her. And you see him see her, his wife die in his arms, basically. And that was like, Christ. And then the next one is when Ares gets off the train in Midgar and our mum's there, a biological mum and a biological mum's dying. And in the original, it's about a 3-4 minute scene mentioned earlier on in the game. But you play through this for about half an hour and you see this kid like hanging on to our mum and trying to get help for her. And a mum trying to be brave and not do it. And I'm not saying that wouldn't have hit home. But earlier on, we talked about Deathloop, how I killed that woman straight away without any thought. It honestly had me weeping because I'd gotten to know this character. In a way, it's different because I got to know through an 80-hour game and now I'm playing through it again. But you know how much of a nice person, how kind she is, how much she looks after her. Because of those little things, you haven't just been force-fed. Oh, she's a nice person. She's this really kind thing. She can be kind and nice and loving through the little things she does all the way through those sort of hours leading up to it. So the reason I don't agree with you is, I agree with the quality part. There are so many games that overstay their welcome, and I don't agree with them. But I do think there can be long 40, 50, 60, even 70-hour games that don't overstay their welcome if they do it well. They're few and far between. Like you mentioned, The Witcher there as well. But I do think they are out there.
Yeah, and I'd say I agree with that. I think if it's the right game, then yes, I think a long playtime can really add to the experience, because I love Dark Souls and I've put hundreds of hours into all of those games, and part of it is the dying and the challenge and pushing past all the struggle, mm-hmm. and makes it seem like a really Mount Everest sort of journey. So I completely agree. If the game is right and the immersion's there and the storytelling is all on point, then yeah, it's a really good thing. And I think we are sort of agreeing here. I know you said you didn't agree.
I think I have got you to disagree with your hot take.
No, because I said on a general basis, if we're talking majority, then I would say shorter games are better.
But you said shorter games are better. We're not talking about quantity. We're talking about quality. I have bigger emotional connection to those longer games in general than shorter games. I'm not saying there's more of them, But I am saying Final Fantasy VII, for me, feels like a better game than shorter narrative games that are out there.
Okay, you say that. All right, fair enough. But what about, you know, some of the... We talked about The Walking Dead Season 1. Mm-hmm. That's a really short game, mm-hmm. but one of the most emotional ones. Mm-hmm. Limbo, Inside, Brothers. You know, you said something like that on my channel the other day.
Get what you mean about shorter stories. That Walking Dead Season 1 really stuck with me. It did. But I would say I'm more connected to the characters in, like, Final Fantasy VII and stuff like that than I am to Clementine. And it's why I've got, like, in my retro room, a sort of shrine to Final Fantasy VII, but not to Walking Dead, even though I think it's a really good game. So I'm not saying you can't do it and there isn't quality, but what I'm saying is, if it's done right, longer games... Your hot take was shorter games are better than longer games. Now, I think the majority these days that's true because a lot of games pad themselves out in order to be longer, to be that. The one reason I haven't started Assassin's Creed Valhalla, I might now that I'm not going to go for the platinum, is because it's like 150 hours to collect everything, to get all those things. I'm like, bullshit, I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that. Doesn't sound like fun at all. Now I'm just doing the story. I might go in and do it. But when it's done right, so the majority of shorter games I think are better than the full length of games are now, but a really well-made long game, Horizon Zero Dawn, I'm not sure how many hours that is exactly in the first one, that sticks with me, and I've got a mini shrine to that one. I think that's probably about a 40-hour game. And I think they sit with me more because you get to know the character. There's more time if you've got an arc for that to naturally happen. I do think, like we've been talking about shorter games recently, a game that I haven't played that I really want to do, Senua's Sacrifice, is a really short, compact quality title. I'm not saying it's not good, but what I'm saying is when I play it, I'll probably say that's an amazing game, but I'll still prefer Final Fantasy VII, your Horizon Zero Dawn. The Last of Us Part Two is probably a little bit too long, but the original Last of Us, would you class the Last of Us, the first one, Part One, if you're not trying to collect everything, would you class that as a long or a short game?
I say that's verging on short. I'd say that's a good 12-hour, 13-hour experience.
Sorry, I have just some really unprofessional open me Pepsi there, right next to the mic.
I thought you were going, shh. You, shut up.
Your opinion's actually deflating me, like physically deflating me. Okay, so yeah, Last of Us. There's a point for you, because The Last of Us Part 1 is 10 times better than Last of Us Part 2, and one of the main differences is length.
Yeah, and that's kind of where I'm coming from. In the kind of storytelling and the themes that that game tackles, I often wonder whether it's as long as it is because they're trying to address the theme of revenge and anger and not knowing when to just throw in the towel.
Yeah.
And that it's supposed to feel like that. You think that everything's happy and it is all tied up, but they just keep on going because they've got nothing else to care for.
It's a little bit Natalie Imbruglia.
Okay, that's a rogue reference.
So Natalie Imbruglia brought out a song called Ironic If You're Young, and nothing she sings about in the song is ironic. It's all just unlucky. 1,000 forks when you need a spoon. That's not ironic, that's unlucky. Rain on your wedding day, unlucky. So at first I got angry at her and like, do you not know what the word ironic means? But then, is it ironic because everything she sings about isn't ironic?
God, you waste your evenings, Tom.
Well, all I'm saying is the same as Last of Us 2. Is Last of Us 2 too long because it's saying that we hold on to our revenge for too long? Like you said, this is where that third in English literature is coming to shine, baby.
Well, I thought it was too long, but I did think there was a bit of a purpose towards it. I feel like that was the intention. I felt like, yes, they are making it seem like this is dragging on for too long because
Would you have had the last Abby part where inadvertently go to save her?
I thought when it's Ellie and her partner and they're in the farmhouse and they've got this lovely life together, and then Ellie turns around and says, I still need to go out. and do what I need to do. I thought, for God's sake, just call it a day. I want to play something else now. But when we do go and have that moment where she's on the cross and they have their fight in the water, mm-hmm. really powerful moment. And I didn't not like the game. I thought it had some very good moments. But ultimately, I thought Naughty Dog succeeded in what they were trying to do. I think they wanted to piss off a lot of people. I think they wanted to put a huge divide down the fan base. And I like when stuff does that. Whether I like it or not is another thing, but I really admire the approach. And it's the same with Joker 2. I don't know if you've seen it, but
not
Joker 2
yet, no.
really... No, Joker 2 really upset a lot of people with the direction that it took. But I think it's got a lot of intelligence behind it, that film. But that's films. We're not talking about films. Anyway, going back to gaming.
Well, going back to The Last of Us Part 2, I honestly think that they got to the end, the part where they come back and she has the nice, well, not nice, but there's the family life and stuff like that. And she can't get over it. I think if they'd ended the game there, maybe they were planning to end the game there. Maybe they were getting up to, I honestly think they were planning up to get to there. They got to that point, and then they thought, the next game, it's going to be on this point of, the next game's going to be going out to get revenge, getting Abby, finally getting her back. And people are like, oh, I can't wait to play the third one because we finally get to kill Abby or this, that, and the other. And then they realise that's not what we want. We're trying to show that this revenge and trying to an eye for an eye is in futile. It's worthless doing. And if we leave it there, people are going to think, right, we're going to the third one to finally see, finish it up by getting Abby. And they thought, we need to put something in at the end to show you this whole story is about letting go. Things happen. And it was really hard. I love Joel. But when the thing happened at the start of the game... And obviously, you get to learn Abby's story and stuff like that. But when the thing happened at the start of the game, I was like, I can understand why people would want to do that. If you're on that perspective of, you know what Joel's done, yeah, I can completely understand that. So I wasn't like, right, let's go get her. They've killed Joel and this, that, and the other. But even if you took 10 hours off, it still would have been classed as a long game. And again, I think it's got really good story parts. So on this hot take, I think a lot of the points that you were talking about, I think, are true when it comes to quality and quantity. However, I can't agree with you. The only caveat that I will put in there is I do agree that games shouldn't overstay the welcome, and there is far too much filler these days.
Yeah, I think I say that's an agreement, personally.
Between us, definitely.
Yeah.
We could talk about this for another, like, hour. I definitely think we could. So let us know in the comments what you think. But we're going to move on. Now what we're going to do is a sort of maybe a This Is Your Life of the decade of the 2000s. So basically what we're going to do is from the year 2000 to 2009, we have went through individually and we have picked our favourite games from those years. One for each year. We'll talk about them, why we think the best, this, that, and the other. But we're not saying these are the best games. We are saying these are our favourite games. Because although we do like a little bit of venom in the comments, I can't be bothered with it. Well, that's wrong because this got this many awards and stuff like this. This is mainly opinion-based when I did this. Is that what you went with, Boxy?
Yeah, it was very difficult, though. I had to consult the internet and find out when everything came out. And I kind of did short lists for every single year, and I've narrowed it down from there. But it was hard.
Yeah,
you don't think a year is a long time, really. Mm-hmm. But every single year, there are at least three bangers.
Well, I sort of cheated a little bit. Most times I've chose a game, but I've got an honourable mention. I couldn't not with each one. I had to say there was two games I was playing with and going in. So I'm going to go straight into the year 2000. So young 13-year-old Tom were playing these games. Now, I looked at the games, and what I actually looked at and what I thought about was, which game did I put the most time into and which game would I be more likely to go back to when I was looking at it? And there was really good games. And my honourable mention is probably some of people's favourite game of all time was Majora's Mask. I put a lot of hours into Majora's Mask. Loved Ocarina of Time. And I thought, oh, we're going to do that one, until I found this one. Now, this is probably not a lot of people's, but it was WWF No Mercy on the N64. And I was looking at games, and at first I was going, that's not like the game critic's choice, or do I need to be more sort of, than nothing, I'm a gamer if I pick this game or anything like that. And I thought, no, you know what it is? In the year 2000, the amount of hours I put in that game was ridiculous. And it was just awesome. Still now, if I'm going to play a wrestling game, I would play No Mercy and WrestleMania 2000. Those two from the N64, it's just, again, fun to play. Really good mechanics, easy to pick up, hard to master type of game. So that was my choice for 2000. What we're talking, Boxy, for you?
You surprised me, because I thought I had this one down for you. I thought you were going to say Crazy Taxi.
Do you know what it is? I do enjoy Crazy Taxi. I probably put more hours in the arcade than I did at home, but it's a good blast of adrenaline. Put it on for half an hour and play it. I don't think it could make my sort of top tier, because if I look at No Mercy again, I think it comes back to, I think the only time I've been happy in my life is when I've had friends, but it was the time where I started playing N64 with friends and people that I lived around, and we were all watched the Attitude Era wrestling, and this game came out and you could do so many different things. I remember one time we had a sleepover and we did a Royal Rumble where one at a time characters come down, but back those days you could only have four in the ring at one time. And when you go over the rope, you're out. But we changed it to the hardest settings, and it had to be like a pin, so that it lasted about 3 hours. And I just remember that so vividly, and I just think I could not put it as my favorite game of 2000.
No, it's a good one, and I wasn't expecting that, so I learned something. I think generally 2000 wasn't a great year for gaming. Not too many magical titles. I would say Majora's Mask is definitely up there. That's one of my favorite Zeldas. It's very dark, and I like that one. Do you know that was the year the last Baldur's Gate came out as well?
Well, before the one that's just come out recently?
Yeah. So it was 23, 24 years gap between Baldur's Gate 2 and Baldur's Gate 3. That's insane.
Wonder what's good. They've been percolating those thoughts for a while.
I know. I mean, it shows the strength of your fan base that you can win Game of the Year and get a massive player base behind it when your last game came out 23, 24 years ago. Deus Ex came out that year. I didn't get into the whole Deus Ex thing. I was too late to that. Tony Hawk 2, I think, came out at that time, yeah, which was a really good game. But for me, the game that I put most time into and I had most fun with was Spider-Man on the PlayStation 1.
Right, the PlayStation 1. Because I've heard you mention Spider-Man 2 being the best Spider-Man game of all time before. You've not mentioned that PS1 version. So is that the first one? Is the second one like Electro's Revenge or something?
That's the second one,
right,
I think.
So just the first one.
Yeah, this one has the comic books at its heart. You know, it's not tied into the Tobey Maguire film or anything like that. It's so full of colour. You fight all the classic villains. You've got Scorpion, Rhino, Mysterio, Carnage, Venom. You team up with Venom towards the later part of the game. So many memorable quotes, so many creative levels as well. There's a bit where you're running across rooftops and there's bazookas firing at you and there's helicopters chasing you. So many good, memorable moments. And it's got Stan Lee as the narrator. So it's a real fan game. So I just had a lot of fun with that back in the day. And it's very story focused. And it's not too long, which fills my boots.
That's awesome. Right, 2001, let you go first this time.
Okay, so 2001 I think was a very strong year, and this one was very hard. We had GTA 3, which pretty much changed the landscape entirely. We had one of your favorites, Devil May Cry. We had Max Payne, but in the end I narrowed it down to two, and they're both sequels: Metal Gear Solid 2 and Silent Hill 2. But I have to go with Silent Hill 2, because I think that game is a masterpiece, and I think it still holds up. I think it's probably one of the best written games ever made. I think MGS2 is fantastic, and I think some of the themes and ideas it has are more timely now than ever. If you look at the comparison between what Metal Gear Solid 2 was talking about in 2001 and where we are now in the world, there are so many comparisons with AI and misinformation. It's such a clever game. And although Konami is so unhinged and he's just like a dog off his leash, he's just throwing everything at the wall. There's a real craft behind MGS2, and I didn't mind Raiden at all. It was a bit of a disappointment when he first took his stupid hat off and you realized we weren't playing as Snake. But Silent Hill 2, having to navigate James Sunderland through his own personal misery, cannot be topped.
I tell you
I
what it
think that
is, it was
game.
always going to win. If a game is depressing, it gets your seal of approval. So it was always going to be that one. And you know what it is, I am really looking forward to play it. I played my first Silent Hill game this year. I'd never played a Silent Hill game. I got off the Yorkshire Gamer, who's a great content creator to follow. He was going to trade it in a CEX. He made a video about it, and I sent a message and went, "Don't. I will give you more than you would get off CEX for it because I know it'll be in great condition." So I played through that and I enjoyed it. But so many people have said, "Wait till you get a two." So I'm going to stream that at some point. I'm taking a couple of weeks off. I might even do be the first game when we come back. Because like in my head, I'm going, do I play it at Halloween next year? But I want to sort of play it before then. And people say, play the first one and then do the remake sort of later. So I'm going to play
Yes,
the original. Yeah, I've got the original
definitely.
in the collection. My honourable mention was Metal Gear Solid 2 as well. It was just, I can remember coming home from school and I played it from the second I got in till sort of going back to school on the Monday, and it was sort of bittersweet because I finished it and it was like, oh yeah, I'll play through everything and talk about it at school and this and the other, but then it was done. Do you know what I mean? You didn't have that of coming back every day after school and getting a play and stuff like that. And it did do amazing things, but there was just a game up there that if I was going to go back to now and I had two of them in front of me, I'd more likely pick it up, and it was Final Fantasy X, which is, for me, one of the, I think a lot of people do love it, but it's one of the most underrated Final Fantasies. People talk about 7, 8, and 9. For me, I also think Final Fantasy X came out quite near the start of the PS2 era, and when you look at that game, it was just blows your mind away. And then you'd played so many hours of Final Fantasy VII, so many Final Fantasy VIII with no dialogue at all, you're reading it all, and then suddenly they're all voiced. We'll forget some of the voice lines in there because you could have picked some of them for the dodgy dialogue, but it was just like, Christ, this, when we were talking about console generation jumps, I was like, my God, where are we going to go from now with gaming? And I love the story, and we'll get into it maybe next week, which we'll allude to at the end. But some of the music on that is my favorite of all time. A piece of music from that is the first piece of music both of my children have listened to in their
Wow.
lives, because I don't know why I meant something. There's a song called To Zanikind. I'm not going to get too much into it because I might talk about this later. But it's a beautiful piece of music, and both of my children, there were moments when I was in hospital and my kids were left with me. I remember with my firstborn for the first time, my missus had to go and get some, I don't know, something, surgery or something. I didn't know. I was doing all the hard work, like you say, those uncomfortable chairs. And I was left with them for the first time, and I was like, shit, what do I do now? I'm a dad, I've got a bairn. And I just calmed myself and stuff. But what am I playing to a kid that's like 2 seconds in the world? And it was a piece of music from that. So it has a very close meaning to me, that game as well. So that I could not pick it. I could not pick it.
It's a good choice.
Yeah. Well, 2002, I think it was another hard one. My honourable mention was Kingdom Hearts. A great game. If you're thinking, oh, everyone talks about Kingdom Hearts being so complicated and stuff like that, play the first one, then stop. The story is quite sort of good in that one. It doesn't get too convoluted for that. I've still played 2, 3, 2.8, 3.4, 365 divided by 7 or whatever it is. I've played those and enjoyed them, and I will play the next one when it comes out. But the first one's a nice sort of story in there. And I love Final Fantasy. Disney grew up on it and stuff like that. So it was just an ideal game for us. But I could not go for Vice City. I couldn't not go for GTA Vice City. For me, the best GTA. GTA does what it does. GTA 5 is essentially a better game than Vice City, but it doesn't have the feeling and the atmosphere, and just was really, really good. And I know San Andreas is technically a better game, but Vice City would be the one I would go back to if someone said, "Oh, put an old GTA on." GTA Vice City. Music tracks. OST was amazing. Just a great game.
A core gaming memory, an inside out core gaming memory for me is when you first get into a car and Billie Jean starts playing.
Yeah. I always ask people that. What was the first song that comes up? That could have been a trivia question. I'd have nailed it. Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, what great, awesome music. Because up until then, GTA 3 had, music wasn't really a selling point, or was it? And then Vice City, they just, half of the songs now from the 80s and stuff that I know, I'll sing them. Where do I know that from? It's like, it's Vice City.
Yeah, definitely. I think GTA 3 was more about the radio conversations.
Laszlo.
Yeah, Vice City tapped more into the music.
This is how sad really good... I was. The Laszlo, I don't, on, it's a chatterbox. I can't remember which one it was. I recorded them. You know, when you press pause, the radio would just play. I recorded them somehow onto was it an MP3 or a mini disc player, and took them to secondary school and used to sit and listen to the chat radio stations in class. That's the type of kid I was.
It's a really good one. And to be fair, I didn't write that one down. But now you've mentioned it, I was like, oh my God, yeah, it was 2002. They pumped out so many games, Rockstar, in the space of just a year. Mm-hmm. And now you look at the gap between Red Dead 2 and GTA 6. I mean, it's, what are they doing? Anyway, my runner-up is the Resident Evil remake, because I think that is such a good example of what a remake should be. Mm-hmm. Taking the shitty elements out of the original, updating the gameplay and the graphics to make it more easier to pick up and play. I think that game is so well designed. A lot of meandering around and wasting time checking a lot of things, but as the first one, it sets such a benchmark going forward, and I think it still holds up. But I am choosing your runner-up, Kingdom Hearts. I'm not much of a Final Fantasy guy, as you know, but I am a Disney guy. I'm a Disney adult. I have so much joy with those films, and apparently playing with Goofy and Donald Duck just feels right at home for me. And as you say, it's not complicated. It's actually very simple, and it's not stupid like the other ones go into. And I like Kingdom Hearts 2, but what the fuck was going on at the start of that game, I have no idea. I have to spend 2 hours bumbling around a town with some kids I don't even like before we even get to the main characters. But back when things were simple and they were just visiting happy little Disney characters and helping them with their problems, so wonderful and such a great game.
I love your swing. I've just 2 seconds ago said, Boxy likes a game, it's depressing, Silent Hill 2, James Sunderland struggle, and then go say to, I bloody love Goofy. I don't know why my impression of you is always Yorkshire.
Yeah, I live nowhere near Yorkshire. You keep saying I'm southern, by the way. I mean, all right, fair enough. I live in the south, but I'm actually from the Midlands. And I grew up.
The Midlands is a myth.
It's not a myth. It's a real place. And they're full of great people.
No, the fact that the Midlands is in the middle of the country is a myth. Have a look at a map.
It's not.
Half the country, the Midlands is much more south than the middle of the country than anyone would give it credit for.
Thanks, Plato. Right.
I did A-level philosophy.
Did you? So did I. I did theology.
Well, I went to a Catholic school and they tricked us because we're like, oh, philosophy and ethics, do this, it's dead cool and blah, blah, blah. And then when I turned up to like my first exam, it was like A-level RE. And I was like, what? And they just tricked me because you could choose different modules and they chose the philosophy and ethics. But as a Catholic school, they had to try and push people into RE A-levels. So I got tricked into philosophy. How philosophical is that? Anyway, 2003, what are you going for?
2003. So you've just said it's weird to see you praise a game that is very joyful and happy. So I'm going to bring us right back down to my level now. The runner-up is Prince of Persia and the Sands of Time. A great game on PS2. Wonderful storytelling. Gameplay's a little bit, ooh, but I'm interested to see what they do with the remake. Yeah. I hope they do something cool with that. But my favorite game of 2003 is Manhunt. I love Manhunt so much. What a depressing, brutal, nihilistic masterpiece that game is. And I applaud Rockstar for putting out something as controversial as that. And they were in so much shit when they released it, but they stuck to their guns. But what holds it up is the fact that it's a very well-made game as well.
I think that's what people forget. People talk about the controversy with Manhunt and the gore and the takedowns and stuff you can do with like carrier bags, piece of glass, all that type of stuff. Manhunt is a great stealth game. I've mentioned it before on my channel. It's a really good, well done stealth game, and people forget that.
There's deeper meaning to it as well. We're talking about philosophy. Yeah. Talk about philosophy of Manhunt, you know. I think Rockstar is so good at giving players the tools to do whatever they want. You know, with GTA, you can go and massacre loads of people if you wanted to, but that's entirely up to you.
Yep.
And with Manhunt, they give you the options to take people out very nasty if you wanted, but that's on you. You know, you can just do things very quickly and quietly. So I love that, changing the perspective on the player and just pointing at them and saying, why are you so entertained by this? This is horrible, you know?
For this year, I had two notable mentions. I couldn't choose between them, but you mentioned one of them, which was Sands of Time. And my other notable mention is a game that probably won't come in anyone's top list for this year, was Sonic Heroes. I put loads of time into Sonic Heroes. There's very few Sonic games that I enjoy after sort of the original three, like Sonic Mania and stuff like that. But 3D ones, not a huge amount. And Sonic Heroes, I did put a lot of time into. But this one, I think, will surprise you again. Because when I looked at it and I thought, which game out of those have I put the most time into and would probably boot up now and go, yeah, I'll have a go at that and I'd get lost in it for a few hours? SimCity 4.
Wow. Okay. I was not expecting that at all.
So being a sort of hybrid PC N64 player around this time, probably coming into like PlayStation 2 more, obviously, I played loads of like Roller Coaster Tycoon, Theme Hospital, the Sim Cities, and absolutely love them. So someone would like talk to me, I'd get, with my ADHD, I'd get hyper focuses on the game for a while and be building this city and get blah blah blah, and then I would lose it and I'd go to another game. But yeah, and if someone said, oh, there's Sim City 4 now, if I went to one of those arcade bars and you've got like Mario, Sonic, this, that, and the other, and I saw Sim City 4, I'd go over and put like, and I could sit there and time would fly by, and just when I was thinking about it, I was thinking, do I put that one in other Sands of Time? And I was like, yeah, because I put more hours into that.
Yeah, if it means something to you. I mean, I wasn't much of a PC gamer, and those games, the strategy games, Rollercoaster Tycoon, XCOM, you know, SimCity, I didn't really do much of that. And to be honest, I didn't even know that game existed. I thought there was SimCity on the PS, on the Super Nintendo, and then I thought there was that really shitty one that came out on the Xbox One, which you always had to be online for.
Well, there was SimCity 2000, which was just the second one. I'm assuming it probably came out in the year 2000. Then there was SimCity 3, 4, and then it fell off a cliff after 4, and went really bad. And now it's City Skylines, which I do every now and then go again. I have it on my PlayStation. It's a PlayStation 4 version, but I don't play it as much because when you're sitting there, you're not much of a PC gamer. They're very keyboard and mouse games. It's so much easier to play with them. So I don't play them as much now, but I do love them. And then we go on to 2004, where I haven't got a notable mention. I've got two winners. I couldn't decide.
You have to decide. Well, see, you can't change the rules.
See, no, there's one game that will be the top of lots of people's lists, and if you've had a look, you'll probably know what it is. That so many people will say this is one of their favourite games of all time, this, that, and the other. It's getting a remake and all those things. But there's one game that I think is a little bit of an underdog, and I wanted to mention it. And I thought, you know what it is? If someone said play one of these two games, I'd play that one, but it's probably because I've played it less. Sort of, I've repeated the other one. Anyway, the two games are Metal Gear Solid Snake Eater.
Yep.
And Second Sight.
Ooh, now, okay.
Second Sight is from the creators of Time Splitters, and it is an awesome game. I'm not going to... There'd probably be less people have played that one than some of the other games I mentioned. I'm not going to mention anything about the narrative or anything like that because I don't want to spoil it if anyone wants to go into it. Because it's got that Time Splitters aesthetic, it's easy to go back to because they weren't trying to be hyper real or anything with when they didn't have the ability to do it. It's quite a little bit cartoony, but it's a very serious game, and it's a great game, and I just absolutely loved it. So I'm going to say I'm going to put Snake Eater as my notable mention, and Second Sight can have it. Because Snake Eater, it's a great game, and I put hours into it. But Second Sight, for me, again, it's one of those where the narrative was just really good, drawing me in. And then there's very few games that surprise me narratively. Like, when you've watched media and films and games and stuff so much, you get to know the sort of the tropes and stuff that are used. And that one was one that actually surprised me with the story, so had to put it up there.
It's a really great game, and it's very underrated. I did play it back in the day, and I have got it. Mm-hmm. And when I go out on my lives, whenever I come around to that one, I say, you know what? I remember this story being amazing, but I just can't remember it fully. I remember the ending really blew me away.
Yep.
And I do need to go back and play it. So I know it's a good game, and I just can't quite remember everything about it because I think I'm just maybe a little bit too young, but really good choices. Yeah, I fully get behind that. An interesting year, 2004, because there was Half-Life 2, which came out.
Yes, or not.
But I have two kind of runners-up, and I was very unsure about which one I'd take. But if I'm being true to myself, there is only really one winner. The runners-up are Katamari Damacy, which I think has one of the best gameplay loops of all time. You can zone out with that game.
Yeah.
The other runner-up is Silent Hill 4, which is one of the lesser respected Silent Hill games, but I think the idea behind it is fantastic and phenomenal. And if there's one game which I desperately wanted them to remake and sort out a lot of the problems with, it would be that one. The gameplay is a little bit hit and miss, but I think the story and the idea behind it is fantastic. But the winner is San Andreas. I remember when that game came out, and everybody wanted it. And when you're not 18, you're trying to get your parents to buy it for you, and then you hear about your mate's parents who bought it for them, so then you try and convince them to go and get it for you. In terms of like stepping up the maturity in games, it was such a big thing. Mm-hmm. The world, it was so big. And I know Rockstar were throwing so much shit at the wall in that game. There were so many things you could do. They did the territory wars. They did the gym, the hunger meters. And not all of it worked. But like for the ambition, the characters, the storytelling, the voice acting, the just step up in quality, I think it's really good. And I always change my mind between San Andreas and GTA 4 is which one's my favorite. But I played it, you were talking about your child with the Final Fantasy music, but I used to get up with my son when he was very young, and I'd put him in the baby Bjorn thing on my chest. Mm-hmm. And I would play San Andreas because I picked up that horrifically shitty definitive edition collection on the PS4, and to be fair, it wasn't too bad for San Andreas. But
I like how our parenting skills are. I played a beautiful piece of music from a narratively amazing story, and you whacked GTA on for him.
Okay, maybe I need to address that. He was asleep. I didn't. I would not do such a thing as to put on GTA San Andreas when he was wide awake. No. Yeah, I have a lot of good memories with that game. So that's going to be my one.
So that was our first half of the decade. We've done from 2000 to 2004. What we're going to do is in a couple of episodes' time, we'll do the back part of the decade and see what we liked. So that's it, another episode in the can. I like saying that word. I keep saying it. It makes it sound professional. So, Boxy, tell us where everyone can find you if they're going to miss you in between the 2 weeks of our podcast.
Oh, God. No, it'd be nice to have a break from us, I'm sure, Tom. You can find me on one and only sole platform that I occupy, which is TikTok. And it's very straightforward. It's at BoxyRT. So I will now pass the mic and strap in and grab a pillow while Tom reels off all his various activities that he does.
Yeah, YouTube is Retro Revival Tom, retro.revival1 on Twitch and on TikTok, which is the bigger platform, the biggest platform I'm on, with the same as Boxy as well. It is Retro Revival 1 as well on there. So we have done 4 episodes now. Next episode, we've got something special for you, because you don't have to just listen to us to ramble again. So next week, we are going to have a guest, so you don't have to listen to us all the time. Liam, for the record, on TikTok, he doesn't have a gaming TikTok, but he is a big gamer. He enjoys gaming. Obviously, as you can tell by his name, he is into music. So we are going to have an episode focused on soundtracks from games, all those types of things. And it's going to be great, because you don't just have to listen to Artie all the time. Me and Liam might have some intelligent conversation for once. You might learn something.
You absolute fucker, I was going to say the exact same thing. That was going to be my comeback. I was like, I was going to look forward to some intelligent conversation, and you stole it. So I'm just looking forward to looking at somebody else's face for 2 hours.
Well, what I'll do is I'll just edit that out. So see you later, guys, on my brilliant ending to the podcast.
Bye.